friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hello, Levi.
Hello, Jen. Today, we are continuing with our Crystal Tower series. Last time, Jen, we went back to discover the origins of the Crystal Tower, and we talked a little bit about Alliance raids.
A little bit.
So today, we are going to be entering the tower itself, starting with the Labyrinth of the Ancients.
Yeah, part one, motherfuckers. Yeah, kind of exciting. Haven't touched this story since we did it the first time. But yeah, like, we get our asses in there.
Get our asses in there.
Yes.
Speaking of asses, Jen.
Great.
We had a lot of people who showed up to join us on this minimum eye level Crystal Tower run.
We did. It was great.
Really, we had a lot of people who signed up. Really appreciate everyone for being willing to join us on this ancient content with a new twist.
Yeah, to see the mechanics for the first time, like literally for the first time. You know, I think the majority of us, if not all of us, were completely blind to how this shit is supposed to go. Even as a brand new player, you do this for the first time, but you're shoved in with a bunch of people who are like, you know, eye level 490, and you know, you do not see mechanics. Whenever I do get Labyrinth of the Ancients, well, not anymore, now that I've done it for reals this time, it was just kind of like following the crowd, kind of like a vague concept of what it is that you're supposed to do. There are no stakes, which is, I think, typical for early roulettes. You don't see mechanics at all. You just wail. You just fucking wail, 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 wail. Don't stand in the goo. Wail, 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 wail. So this was a major reality check, and it was great to see some, you know, ancient mechanics and how it was supposed to be.
Some ancient mechanics, Jen?
Thank you. That was the joke.
Cool. But this is really a hard dungeon if you do it at the actual item level at item level 50 versus, yep, 120, whatever.
Eye level 50, I can't imagine. Is that what we were running on?
Yes.
50?
Item level sync is 250.
No.
So we are over twice.
God damn.
Required item level when we do so in Alliance Daily Roulette.
I was like, it's probably going to be like 80.
No. This is why we get to ignore all the mechanics when we do so in ADR, because we are twice the gear level that it requires.
At a minimum. Yeah. Yes. Good God.
So this is actually, again, this is a really hard dungeon. It's on par, I think, with some extremes in terms of the difficulty of some of these fights in here. And there are a lot of fights, and they all have mechanics.
Nobody knew.
The last boss, though, is somehow the same as on normal mode.
Which is great, because it has bottlenecks. You can't just blast through it. You actually have to do the things. So that was like, oh, hey, I know this one. Behemoth fight? Nobody knew what the fuck.
Yeah,
nobody
that one knew is what the a fuck. Fuck.
By the way, there are towers. There are towers in that fight. Did you know?
So let's get into it. Thank you to everyone who joined us, including...
Yes, yes, thank you. It's going to be a long list.
Golden Abbey, Quasar Red, Ewinner Zoranthar, Depontau Jessel, Chi Miyu, Raven Ghostpaw, Ash Rosenpire, Kiko Fay, Hingus Dingus, Sheer Grub, Nefla Highwind, Naughty Ivy, Shara Zephyr, Marvin Corvus, Calidus Caddis, Freya Highwind, Rina Chilloway, Athena Kylo, Seo Mihata, Otis Oldthing, Vestal Gorgonoth, Keelan Tharis, and Boro Goro. Thank you all. Everyone did amazing. Really appreciate you showing up for this.
Yeah, y'all rocked it out. Y'all are very skilled. Okay, we did it. We did the thing. And shout out to Raven, our main tank for the whole ordeal. And he got us through some shit, gotta say. That said, also all of our healers had a hell of a job.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah. It was really touch and go there for many moments, but we did it.
That said, at least one of our off tanks was new to raid style tanking too. So a lot of people stepped up above their normal limits for
this. Yes, yeah, there was some, not hesitation, not consternation, some trepidation. From a lot of people like, oh, what if I don't know this or that? Like, it doesn't matter. Just show up and do it and figure it out. And like, you're good enough. You're smart enough. And people like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This quest series begins in Revenant's Toll with an outlandish man trying to get our attention. This blonde-haired fellow has a weird tech visor that's covering his eyes and forehead.
I mean... yeah, we know who this is. But at the time when I did it the first time, it's not so obvious because you don't ever see this person, one, in like civilian clothes. I'm not sure that you ever see him without his headgear.
You mean without the helmet?
Yeah.
Oh, you definitely do.
Oh, like, okay. So again, but it's probably been quite some time since you saw that little bit of his body.
Beyond that, Jen, the light in Mordona is fucky with all the ether shit going on.
Sure.
So he will look very different too in this light than in other lightings.
He is still an extraordinarily tall blonde man, and they do not pop up very frequently.
They don't make him like that anymore.
Oh my god.
So anyway, this complete stranger, Jen, has an amazing opportunity for us. The one that bested that Garlean general. Only someone of our caliber is up to this task.
Right.
And he's going to give us this hookup for no personal gain. The accumulated knowledge that we shall unearth shall be reward enough to this generous fellow.
Yeah, like, okay, bro. Yeah, so the offer is like the accumulated knowledge of an ancient civilization at the risk of death. So it's a fucking Tuesday or whatever. And he was like, you should go talk to Rambrose about this quote-unquote opportunity. Oh, okay. So that's fine. We know Rambrose. We'll go talk to him.
We do because we've done the seminar quest line.
Yeah.
For those who haven't, Rambrose is the leader of the Sons of Saint Coinock. The Sons are a politically neutral research group dedicated to unearthing all things Alleg. Rambrose is actually a member, at least a former member, of the Circle of Knowing, though he did not follow its members when they formed the Scions of the Seventh Dawn. He found that Alleg's call was stronger. Rambrose is stationed at St. Coinock's Find in the crystalline fields of Mordona. This camp is a base for Allegan research in the area, not just the Crystal Tower, but there is a wealth of Allegan ruins below the surface of Mordona that the Sons are in the process of excavating. There are several side quests available here as well, helping out the Sons. These are mainly camp tasks, killing Gygas that are menacing the researchers, delivering the mail. There are no real lore bombs here. But one curious thing that arises, though, is that apparently the Gygas revere the Crystal Tower as a holy site, and they migrated to Mordona after it surfaced during the Calamity. One of these side quests kicks off the post-Moogle quest series, which we'll be hitting when we wrap up A Realm Reborn.
Oh. When you say post-Moogle, I immediately went to, like, post-modern. What the fuck does that mean? What is a post-Moogle society look like?
Pretty no, cute, Jen. Like that's
the
post, what.
The mail. Okay, yes. Got it. We go like, hey, Rambrose, this outlandish man, this oddly dressed person, told us about this opportunity. And Rambrose is like, well, yes, that's exactly right. But how does this random person that I don't know about this? Huh. Anyway, we're going to press past that. And we are going to welcome your involvement. And we really could use your help, like, straight up. And while we're talking to Rambrose, a familiar voice pipes in, like, what? As I live and breathe. And it's Cid. Cid's here. Of course Cid's here. And we're like, what's up, dude? You know, been a while, la la la. And he's like, wait. Don't tell me. The Alliance has sent you on another realm-shaking, history-making mission to lay low an apparently insuperable foe. Am I right? Wait, no? And then we tell him why we're here. Sid calls us out on the very himbo decision that we've just made. As in, we were like, yeah, sign us up. And he's like, you don't know anything about what you've just signed up for, right? Right. Okay, let me tell you. So what the Suns are doing this time is they're going even deeper to unearth Allegan relics. Even deeper. Going deeper, guys. And, you know, don't worry about your lack of training or whatever. Like, you straight up, you face the ultimate weapon. You have spent a lot of time, very intimate time with Allegan tech. So you're more than qualified. Don't worry about it.
We are intimately acquainted with disassembling Allegan tech, comma, forcefully.
It's true, man. What they are embarking, this new endeavor that is so much more dangerous than anything they've done before, is the Crystal Tower. You see this thing? It kind of, you know, it's looming in the distance. This is one ancient Allegan structure that has yet to be explored. And in an effort to keep the next psycho from taking control, we must explore, document, safeguard it, maybe seal it away forever.
We now switch to a flashback of Sid and a couple of the Suns surveying the tower from the outside. An ornate stone path leads up to the Crystal Tower, which is flanked by 8 statues of sword-wielding figures. Between each pair of figures is a colored line set into the stone, intersecting the approach to the Crystal Tower. Sid tosses a stone between one pair of these statues, over one of the lines, which is colored a dull red, and a barrier erupts over it, disintegrating the stone. Sid goes on to narrate that they believe the tower is a repository of the ancient's wisdom, but due to its defenses, nobody has set foot inside. The first challenge will be overcoming the 8 stone sentinels that bar our passage. Why not fly there, you ask? Well, anything approaching from the air is shot down by the tower's defenses, so we have to approach on foot. This is our first challenge. Each of the pair of statues has a barrier aspected to an element: fire, wind, water, and earth. These can potentially be reflected back with an aspected elemental crystal of surpassing clarity, such as the specimens used in primal summoning rituals. So now we are tasked with heading to the Beastmen bases to kill their sentries and steal their crystals. So now we go on to go to all 4 of the Beastmen strongholds, kill an enemy, get their crystal, and return. And for some reason, we can only fit 2 at a time, so we gotta kill 2, come back, go out, kill 2 more, come back, then we're done with a step.
Petting. That's all well and good. The crystals in their native state are pretty much perfect. These are flawless specimens. But they're not done. They need additional treatment. They need to be cut and polished. And you can't cut and polish these with just any old, you know, sunshine cloth or whatever. We have to use ether aspected ether sand, which is an extremely rare material. And of course, we're going to have to go get some of that. So Rambrose, he placed an order with the Goldsmiths Guild of Uldah probably months ago. And they don't have it, they don't have it, they don't have it. And he's like, you know, maybe if the Warrior of Light shows up with a fat stack, it might produce something.
It's so, a fat sack, Jin.
Correct.
Of Gil.
Correct. We all know what I meant. Benjamins, right? Fat stacks.
I don't think that Benjamins has any meaning in this world, Jin.
Of course it doesn't. Of course it doesn't. Come on. Let me make my 90s jokes. That's what we do. We go to the Goldsmiths Guild. We have a huge sack of money. What's her face?
Serendipity.
She's like, you know what? I was just about to call or notify. There's no calling. Notify Rambrose that we did just get some. We finally fucking got some. And I mean, obviously it's yours because you put the order in 1 million years ago. Why don't you go talk to Jim? Oh, seems like she's talking to somebody else right now.
We overhear an altercation from the Goldsmith reception desk. Someone else is infuriated that they cannot get their hands on Aether Sand. It's Biggs.
Yeah, he's like, come on! Our budget's totally fucking blown. We can't move forward on this tech until we have this ether sand. You don't understand. And she's like, I mean, I'm sorry, sir. We already have a, we have an order in place in front of you. There's nothing I can do.
We head over to flex our bulging gill pouch.
Gross.
We plop it down, that fat sack.
Great.
I'm just saying what happened.
We
plop our fat sack in front of Biggs.
Oh my God.
And we make it clear to the receptionist that the sand is ours and we can pay for it. Biggs now realizes that he's in trouble, especially once he figures out from us that his boss is working on this secret project too.
Well, he's also happy to see us. Let's just get that out of the way. It's not like, you son of a bitch. He was like, hey.
He isn't like, you son of a bitch, but he is like, son of a bitch.
Well, yes, because suddenly, you know, his buddy and his boss are after the same material. Like, you know, he and Wedge have been working on a new crystal-powered propulsion system that requires all four aspected ether sand varieties.
I'm going to be a nitpicky jackass, Jin, but there are six elements. And there also are a lot more types of ether sand than just the quote elemental ones too.
Thank you.
But they require the same ones that we require, which are the air,
the four
earth, wind, fire.
Core elements. Yes. Like lightning
what
and
this
ice.
Four core, Jen.
Lightning and ice. They're
you
want
to take that bullshit to the Thaumaturge's Guild, Jen, and see how that flies?
It's a little bit of stretch.
Oh, I'm sorry, right, lightning. You're not
is,
a core
ice is
element.
Ice is a subset of water, and lightning is a subset of air, so.
You're made of fantasy bullshit elements that are four versus six have just as much validity as the six elements in Eorzea.
Oh, okay, great. Great.
All six
Maybe
are
he
on
does
equal
need all
standing.
Six.
He doesn't. He needs the same four that we do. But there's nothing less elemental about the remaining two that we don't need.
Oh
right
my God,
now.
I'm not questioning their status as
this
elements.
This coming from
I'm
a fucking
like,
Black Mage OG person saying that ice and lightning are lesser elements.
I didn't say they were lesser. I'm saying that they're maybe redundant.
They're not lesser, they're redundant.
I mean, they're absolutely like, you know, useful and vital when we're talking about black mage. I don't. Why are we talking about this? Where are we going? Where have we gone? We need to get back on task. Biggs tells us, you know, what they've been working on, which is very exciting, right? And since this batch was technically reserved by the Suns before him, he allows us, how generous, to take it. And also the receptionist is like, bro, her sack is so much bigger than yours. So... Yeah, no.
He concedes, but only if we give him a position on our secret project.
Of course, dude. Like,
I mean, it's not our call, but we say yes anyway.
I mean,
because
yeah, he's gonna make it happen.
See,
he's just gonna show up.
This is how the mysterious stranger found out about it, because no one has any OPSEC here.
Yes.
Like, hey, can I join your project? Sure. Why not?
Blah,
welcome.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they're probably hanging out at Seventh Heaven every night and just like talking about it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But though, now that he's on board, he tells us that he's got a lead on some other aether sand. This is what Wedge is working on right now. There apparently is a trader in northern Thanaland that has a supply. So Wedge is off trying to procure that.
And Biggs is like, I know what you're thinking. Wedge doesn't typically do stuff by himself. However, he has recently been very much inspired by you, the Warrior of Light, and how you can just kind of like do stuff. So he wanted to do this on his own. He did hire a bodyguard, though, because he's not, you know, completely like a changed man. So, but because it's Wedge, maybe check up on him.
We do. We head to Camp Blue Fog.
He's
and
in the
find,
middle of some shit. God damn it, this well, guy.
We find his guard, a Rogadin woman.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, we got by some bandits and I bailed and I haven't seen him since. So.
Yeah, so she's not going back there because F that, she says. Real classy bodyguard / adventurer.
I mean, she's like her bread
name,
and butter.
Her name is Experienced Adventurer or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and, no, she's experienced because she knows when to get the fuck out of a situation, okay?
Well, we don't, Jin, so we head on in.
No, we're like, we got Heidel on our side. We're a little cocky, okay? But, like, Wedge, he totally got himself into some bullshit. He just went to go talk to this guy. The bandits stole the ether sand from this guy. So that means Wedge is either dead or he's, like, hiding out. Or he's lost forever in the Mithril Mines. So meeting up with them.
The mines in question are the abandoned Amagina Mithril mines, outside of which there are the ruins of some old offices and warehouses.
So we're off to find this fucking kid. He is in the middle of a swarm of lunatic followers and grenades. Like, absolutely fucking swarming. This isn't a situation where I can just, like, fly in, drop myself at a good spot and sneak in. Like, no. He's gotten himself deep into something. So you sneak in. I did have to kill, like, two dudes because you can't not. So Wedge is, and I just have to say Wedge is my favorite. Love him. We'll always love him. But he is cowering in a corner of this decrepit old building. You know, some kind of... It's a small building. And he's in the corner, and we are listening to him talk to himself. He's giving himself a little pep talk. He's like, okay, I gotta get out of here. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna stand up, and I'm gonna turn around, and I am just gonna walk out of here. Whew! And he does it. Good for him. He has no idea that we're there watching him. He's doing this for his own self, okay? And he turns around, and he's like, and he runs right into us, and he doesn't even realize that it's us at first. It's just, we're just like a body, and he just goes, please don't kill me, oh my god, and does his little, like, panic dance, which is the most adorable thing. And he's like, oh, hey, what's up? And hold on. And in the midst of his panic, this is, like, one of my most favorite lines in the whole game. This line comes out of his mouth. Otis? Because it's me. Is it really you? But how did you find me? Can you smell fear? And can you smell fear? Because he's just soaked in fear. Because he's Wedge. I just think it's so fucking brilliant and so cute and so self-aware, and it's just brilliant. Love it. Anyway, how did you find me? Can you smell fear? Fucking just dead. I'm dead. Anyway, after I recover, we have to find, he dropped the sack somewhere. We find the sack. We go back to Rambrose and we're like, all right, we got two of them.
Also, Wedge insists that he join the project too.
Of course.
So now we've got two Aether Sands out of four. That'll get us past two barriers, so Rambrose goes off to work on the first pair of crystals. In the meantime, Cid asks us how it went, and we report that we now have two hangers-on, Biggs and Wedge. Typical, he says, but he welcomes their help. In the meantime, let's grab that other Aether Sand. And about that, says Rambrose, so he had charged an associate with tapping the Gridanian markets for a sand. This person hasn't given word for some days, but that's, quote, typical.
Not just a person, a Charlian person. Hopefully he's got some chops.
Regardless, though, this one is unreliable notoriously.
Yeah, he's been incommunicado. That whole thing. You know, I haven't heard from him in a long time. Let's go make sure he hasn't died.
Oh, Rambrose says, no, don't worry about that guy. We got to focus on the mission, because the more time that passes, the more loose lips will let more strangers in on this project.
There's a whole town square in Mordona, and now there are 12 outlandish men.
So we head for Gridania to pick up the trail here of the sand, and we talk to our favorite market master, Paris Montre.
Nailed it.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah.
He is bemused by this request. He hasn't seen this sand pass through here in years. But if we're suicidal enough to go to the source, we can, which is a place in Earth's Gift, which apparently is guarded by a mean hog. A big, angry boar.
No, I enjoyed this too. And we walk up and we're like, hey, Paris Montre, we're looking for some stuff. And he's like, well, that's hilarious, because it's been long years since I've seen a speck of that shit in the market. But if you wanted to find the ore from which you can derive Aether Sand, you could just, like, die and go find it by this huge thing. He's like, oh, you don't care about that. Okay, well. And then he tells us about Earth's Gift and the hog.
We pop over to Earth's Gift, and we're too late. We find the body of the hog on the ground, just a carcass. No sand, no ore, no pig. But a disembodied...
The pig has ceased to be!
A disembodied voice mocks us as we survey the scene. We're too late. There's no trace of the ore here, says the voice. But its victory has made it magnanimous. We can find wind-touched ether sand elsewhere from Ixal in their North Shroud logging grounds. But, says this unknown voice, we had better hurry because it's going to race us to this sand. Seemed
race.
Weird, but...
And go!
We hop on over.
What the fuck is happening? This is very strange.
We hop on over, having nothing else to do, and we find a crate near a landed Ixal balloon. A few Ixal pop out, we kill them in a few seconds, and now the mysterious voice sounds out again. We put on such a show against this speed bump trash mob fight that thoughts of the sand slipped from its mind. The sand is ours, but, it says, it wants to give us a reward for such an impressive display.
This has scholar or fucking summoner guildmaster vibes all over it.
Right?
I hate it.
The reward will be waiting for us in the ruins to the east. So we say okay and head over to the ruins to the east where we find all those Dolahans. I agree with Jen. This is irksome in a very fundamental way. This whole, like, I puppet master, teehee, I'm better than you.
Yes, dance for me, puppet! Dance! Like, that's, like, come on. Like, we're not, we've all got shit to do. Like, what is happening
Not this
here?
Guy.
Yeah, like, how gross.
Our reward, Jen, for our impressive combat display is...
Which is dumb, but okay.
It's dumb because it was, again, like a couple AoEs being spammed and then the fight's over.
Yeah.
But anyway, Woo! We pop on over... And we find a sack full of water-aspected ether sand from Earth's gift.
Yeah, so whoever this person is, they have treated the ore and pulled out the ether sand that we need. Like, he's already done it for us. Like, why? What is happening?
I assume it ground the ore into sand or something. Irrelevant, ultimately. Anyway, though, the
no,
more
I don't
impressive...
care how. It's the fact that he...
The more impressive thing is that in the 10 seconds it took to teleport to the North Shroud etherite...
Okay,
and fly
all
to the
right.
logging ground.
You gotta turn your brain off for just a little bit. It doesn't take 10 seconds to, well...
It did, and it does.
Okay.
And also, this was during a, quote, race.
Correct.
For the voice to get here.
Well, how long how okay. No, the whole thing's stupid. I don't know why I'm trying to justify it.
But yes.
Like how long ago did he kill that hog? How long has he been like waiting
okay.
for us to show up?
So
it,
fair.
It could have been like 4 days.
You're right. He could have been hanging out there for 4 days being, all right, Rambrose is gonna send someone and we're gonna make them seem real dumb.
I mean, like when in this process did he get this idea, like, oh, you know what would be funny? If I totally stopped talking to Rambrose and he thought I was dead. And then had to send somebody to, like, pick up my pieces.
That's what happened, Jen.
And then he's just, like, waiting for that person.
You nailed it. You're just, like, camping out there. All right, it's going to be so great.
I mean, this is, like, if this is a Charlene person, then that's, this is a little bit of, like, this is some 4D chess or whatever. Because, you know, if Rambrose is going to send somebody in his stead, it would have to be somebody that is, like, as good or better than he is. So it would be somebody who's like...
I wouldn't give them
like,
that much credit, but...
I would, because it's Rambrose, and it's, you
I
know.
Meant give this voice that much credit.
Well, we don't know anything about the voice, but, well, we do. So we know that they're Charlene, and that does have some connotations, right? That does
I mean,
carry some
Charlene
weight
Charlene means esteemed scholar, probably. Not to type a whole people here,
I
but
mean, I mean, yeah, you could just, like,
are
live
largely
there.
Scholars.
Correct. Okay, so we can make that assumption. Also, because they're working for the Sons of St. Koinock... There's probably a very rigorous interview process. Like, you can't just be like some fuckstick who works in a diner on Charlene. Not that that makes you a fuckstick, but maybe you're a fuckstick and you also happen to work at a diner. Okay. Rambrose is not hiring that person to do this job.
Yeah.
Okay. We can agree. And then, so he's like, all right, you know what? What if I just, it's taking me a little while. Rambrose is definitely going to send somebody after me. This person is probably going to be pretty fucking good at what they do. I'm a scholar of history. I'm a recorder of history. Let's see what happens. Maybe I can put it in a book.
Anyway, Jen, the voice tells us that it never meant to give us the water aspected ether sand, but it was so impressed by our display of prowess that it was moved to this display of generosity. And it says that its vocation is to record history as made by mortal men, and it prefers the accomplishments of the bold and mighty. We shall meet again, it says, and sooner than you imagine.
Great.
No thank you, but Okay.
Cool. So that was really weird. But we got the sand, so let's go.
We head back and turn over the sand. Sid goes to finish off the crystals, shaping them into four fang-shaped pieces. At this point, Biggs and Wedge rush up. Not so fast, Chief. We're coming with. Fine, says Sid, but we're not here to take this knowledge for ourselves. It's too dangerous. Remember the creed of the Ironworks, freedom through technology. They will not truck with machines that can be used to promote tyranny. And at this point, a mysterious voice sounds out. A compelling viewpoint. It is unyielding wills such as yours that have defined the course of history. We look up and we see a red-haired Mikote atop some scaffolding round the elegant ruins. This guy has a bow slung over his back. Rambrose recognizes this person. At long last, he says, you return. What has kept you so preoccupied that you couldn't inform me of your progress?
Oh! Oh! This is the dude! Oh, God, Rambrose, your boy put us through some shit.
This person says that he tasked a passing adventurer with delivering the ether sand. And now he leaps from this 2 or 3 story high scaffolding and lands on the crystalline ground before us. The camera sweeps around to reveal his face, showing that one of his eyes is red. He says, greetings, adventurer. Did I not say that we would meet again? So, Jen, I despise this character right now. The first impression is Teehee Puppet Master.
Uh-huh.
The second impression is too cool for school badass.
Yeah.
0 out of 10, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. All terrible first impressions. We are not impressed. Though apparently our character kind of is. Our character kind of like gets it. Because we're like smiling at him this whole time. Like, oh man, you fucking got us. Just look at you. But yeah, he is indeed a Charlian scholar. He has the tattoos. He has the etheric meter around his neck to prove it.
He introduces himself as Graha Tia, one of the students of Baldessian. Rambrose explains that Graha has been assigned as an observer. He hopes that we'll forgive his eccentricities. Speaking of eccentricities, Jin, Graha says that now our fellowship is complete. 3 cheers for Noah. And nobody knows what the fuck he's talking about.
What are you talking about? It's like, Noah!
He's like, Noah! Just don't ask him. Just nod and let's keep moving on.
Well, I'll tell you. It means...
No, thanks.
Nominated observers of artifacts historical, sort of. I mean, that is what it means. However, it's also the name of an Allegan Archmagus.
And a vaunted Final Fantasy III Archmagus.
And then Wedge is all like, what? An Archmagus? Yeah! And he gives Graha a thumbs up, and Graha's like, yeah, dude, and he gives him a thumbs up, and there's lots of thumbs up in. Everybody's excited.
So Graha has decided to give us a name because we are a collection of representatives from disparate organizations. By this name, we are bound.
He is so, you know, so all of his other things notwithstanding, it is very clear that he is, like, giddy. He is giddy to be here. He is so happy to be here. It's like, it's childlike and it is very endearing. And he will wear us down so fast.
Time to get rolling, says Rambrose. And the camera cuts between all of the expedition members who all nod. And then a text box says, Noah, ready. It is kind of cute that...
It is cute.
That the whole group we're as Noah says
hey guys,
ready.
Yeah, we're Noah now.
We make for the entrance to the tower. Graha nominates himself as leader. Even though he's technically an observer, he also has the most elegant knowledge among all of us. So we head for a crystalline gate and arrive at the stone walkway guarded by the sword-wielding statues. They loom ominously over the walkway, glowing dully with their respective elemental colors. Graha goes to test the defenses himself, firing an arrow. It strikes the first elemental barrier and bursts into pieces. Sid now hefts the Thing of Fire to grant us passage properly. Biggs, though, is alarmed. Are you sure that you should be the one testing these, Chief? Sid says he made these. He should test them. He'll own his work. And so, he thrusts the fang between the two sentinels and the energy backfires, shattering the statues.
Okay, just real quick. We shape these things into a fang, right?
Yes.
What do fangs do? They pierce, right? They pierce, they stab. Yeah, you don't hold them sideways like a weird banana and shove your entire hand and this thing like in line latitudinally with the gate. You pierce it with the thing, and if the thing obliterates, then your hand isn't also in the middle of it.
Maybe be like, you I have to channel works. The energy through the respective ends of the fang to make it work. Are you the genius inventor, owner of the ironworks?
I don't think so, Jin. I am sorely disappointed in his decision to be like, I'm going to hold this sideways, okay? I'm not going to like pierce the gate with just the crystal. I'm also going to pierce the gate with my hand.
Yes. Well, the armchair observer has logged in to tell us how to use the elemental fangs that Sid invented.
You don't fucking know, and you totally agree with
but
me. You're just being an asshole. You are. Like, a reasonable person would totally agree. Like, you would stab it, not hold it sideways so that you can get your whole hand and wrist
every
all up
reasonable
in this gate
person.
That is just obliterated stone, an arrow, who knows what the fuck else.
Well, they work great, Jin. And now the rest of the party takes a fang and begins shattering each gate in turn. Our character gets the last one, the earth-aspected barrier. We thrust the fang forward, holding it parallel to the line, Jin, and it shatters the guardians, allowing us passage, finally, towards the tower. Graha is now hot to trot, but Sid proposes that the group hang back while we, the Warrior of Light, and a hand-picked party of our adventuring companions enters the tower first.
When Sid is like, okay, bro, we can't go in yet because look what we just had to deal with on the outside. Can you imagine what's going on the inside? So let the Warrior of Light go, blah, blah, blah. And the look on Graha's face the whole time while Sid is like, no, hold your horses. He's like, what? What? I want to go in though. Like, he's just like, you told a kid that there's gonna be no Christmas. He's so disappointed. Man, this guy really, really loves what he does.
But Sid says that only a true hero can hope to brave the hazards ahead and make way for the less combative. Meanwhile, the support crew will set about analyzing the outer defenses. We could sure use your ancient elegant knowledge here, Mr. Grahatia.
You know, give him a little something. You know.
So he accepts this proposal, but he does say, though, that the base of the tower is surrounded by a maze known as the Labyrinth of the Ancients. We should focus on clearing out the hostile elements, and once secure, we should contact them, but please try to not destroy too many elegant artifacts in the process.
You got it.
Labyrinth of the Ancients, unlocked. All right, Jin, here we go. We are entering the labyrinth. Jin has closed your computer. The notes end here.
Notes end here.
There is a big, big caveat for all these mechanics that we're talking about. Due to the way that a Realm Reborn item sync works, like we discussed at the beginning, most of the shit does not matter for the regular Alliance Daily Roulette parties that hit this all the time and steamroll it. So we're going to be talking about the mechanics that we experience on Min Eye level. Not the normal synced level of difficulty that most people will experience. So we enter the labyrinth. The interior of this place is a massive dungeon of stone pathways that are raised above rivers of magma. Not really a maze, just a big crossroads that we have to explore each leg of. So first off, Jin, we head inside and take the path to the left from this giant crossroads in the center of the labyrinth. And we descend now to a sub-level that is essentially a big poison swamp. So in this place, the arenas here have multi-tiered stone platforms, and during the fights, there'll be a big poison swamp that raises and lowers up to the level of the various tiers of the stone platforms. If you're in the poison, you're going to get poisoned. It's going to suck. So it's going to force you onto the platforms. It's an interesting gameplay conceit, but makes no sense whatsoever from story.
No.
Guess there are poison swamp systems on the fritz down here, Jin. On minimum eye level, even the trash fights in here are rough. We got a rude awakening immediately with a wipe due to cleaves from the dragon void scent in the very first trash fight. We had to regroup a couple times and turn them to make sure that they were cleaving with their front and tail along the arena sides and not towards the center. So we had to turn them essentially parallel to the sides of the arena. There are also is a horde of little elemental sprites in here as well. Pretty much kill the small adds, kill the big adds, you're good to go. But those cleaves hurt a lot on min eye level.
They will kill you.
They will kill you in one shot. The next room was a bit easier. There are scythe-wielding fiends here and a bunch of imps. The main wrinkle is that the larger void scent here have a nasty damage and knockback effect, which will knock you into the poison swamp if you're not careful. But we took care of that, no problem. And then onto a room with Aramons and Succubi. This was tougher because the stone platforms are pretty narrow, pretty small on the upper levels. So when the poison pool rises, you'll be forced into a very small area along with the enemies here. And so enemies drop AoEs right on top of them. Even so, we knocked it out and got to the end of the first leg, the Bone Dragon. This is a skeleton dragon that just won't quit. We have to defeat it 3 total times before it'll stay down. Every time it dies, little skeletons rush the boss. Each skeleton that hits the boss deals raid-wide damage, so you want to focus on the skeletons as that damage will stack up quickly. I believe if 3 skeletons hit the boss during any one adds phase will be a wipe on min eye level because of the damage they deal. 2, you can survive just barely. 3, it's over. So what you gotta do is you need to make sure that the off tanks in the party will grab the skeletons and will lead them away from the dragon, and then you kill them on separate stone platforms a good distance away from the dragon. So when the dragon dies and the skeletons revive, they have to cover some ground before they reach the dragon and can detonate. During that time, you have to burn them down ASAP to make sure they do not contact the dragon. Further, if 2 skeletons die close to one another, they will tether together on revive, and they will be much faster if they have tethered than if they do not tether. So the ones that are in close proximity will book it towards the dragon ASAP. You've got a couple seconds to burn them down before they contact and do those raid wides.
It's not going to happen. They're so fast when they're tethered.
Assuming, though, you're able to space them out and burn them down before they reach the dragon, it's no big deal. The main challenge of the fight is managing those adds and making sure that you kill them spaced out away from the dragon. During the last revive round, there are some Aramons that appear. They're no big deal. They're really just making tank adds. It's the skeletons that are the real challenge in the fight. After that's done, we teleport back to the entrance and head right. Here, we reach a 3-part branching path leading to 3 raised stone projecting platforms that are separated by deep pits. On the end of each of these projecting paths is an Atomos. This is one of the few mechanics that even normal raids can wipe to, depending on how many new players are present and how many inattentive people and or late people get to the fight. Because each alliance has to go down a separate path. If one of the paths is too short on people, you cannot complete the fight and it will wipe. Each Atomos, a big sucking maw, will be shielded at the beginning of the fight. You have to have 4 players standing on a platform on the opposite end of each raised path to lower the shield. If there are fewer than 4 people on that higher platform, the shield will be up and you cannot kill the Atomos and you will wipe. So, if someone is too eager and they start the fight before the rest of the party arrives, then everyone will be defaulted towards the leftmost path, and you just cannot kill the other ones on the other platforms.
So, you know, chill.
So chill and go down your respective ladder. If people are feeling kind, people will mark the different pathways A, B, and C. But it's essentially one big puzzle. As in, if you're able to figure out that you have to split the alliances up and have 4 people stand on the platforms, this is a very easy fight, even on min eye level. They spit out adds during the course of the fight. You just ideally bring them back in range of the platform crew to shoot at, but It's not required on normal difficulty. Ultimately, though, you stand on the platform, you kill the adds when they come out, you DPS the Atomos, and you're good to go. Once all three are dead, a path raises from the depths to allow the alliances to reunite and to proceed. And now we get to the boss of this leg, Thanatos. This is a big iron giant on a circular platform. Spaced equally out around the edges are magic pots. These are little imp guys in ceramic pots. The magic pots are friendly and can die, and can also be healed. Thanatos, though, is spectral and cannot be damaged, except that one of the pots will beam a selection of players with energy, granting them astral realignment. These realigned players must focus on the boss. They can damage the boss. The non-realigned players are on ad killing duty. Some adds will cause the pots to be chained and will be pulled towards the center. You want to prioritize these tethering adds, otherwise Thanatos will kill a pot that's pulled all the way to the center. And if you have no pots left over, then you cannot get realigned and you cannot kill Thanatos. Otherwise though, kill adds, kill the boss if you're aligned, and you're good to go. So we teleport back to the center of the labyrinth, and we head now down the center path to the north. Two, the Allegan Bomb. This is a circular platform in the middle of a lava lake. In the center is a giant bomb void scent. And people here love to take baths in the lava lake before the fight starts. The auto heal from being out of combat mostly offsets the damage over time from the lava, but it's a thing that people do.
I mean, why not? You know?
Because we're here on a mission, Jen. Serious business.
Well, you know, we gotta wait for other people to show up. May as well take a lava bath.
Around the outside edge of the arena are three sword-wielding, demon-like void scent. Each alliance needs to pick up one of the demons. So pretty much, you gotta split into three groups, as always, and your alliance must DPS down the sword void scent that you're assigned to. If one of them is too far damaged compared to the others, it will become invulnerable temporarily to give the other alliances a chance to catch up. You cannot focus fire on one and then call it good. You must kill them at a roughly equal rate. During the fight, though, smaller bombs will spawn and head for the center. You've got to kill these adds ASAP, because if too many of them reach the middle bomb, it will explode and it'll be a wipe. We press on now to King Behemoth. This is our first official Behemoth, and make sure that you learn these mechanics with the meteors, because there will be a lot of variants of this mechanic throughout the course of the game.
So this was, besides Bone Dragon, honestly, relatively speaking, Bone Dragon was a cinch compared to this. This fight reminded us of, like, Coil's tier fights. Their positioning is very important. Tanks have a main tank has a very particular role. Off tanks have a very particular role. Like, everybody's got to be on point. And the placement of meteors, that's like one of eight things you have to be managing. So certain players will be targeted with meteors. And these are the meteors that you need to drop so that you are protected from the big ass fucking, like, raid killer meteor that drops.
The ecliptic meteor.
Exactly. So Behemoth is going to stand on his hind legs. He's going to stand on his hind legs, summon this ecliptic meteor, and you have to make sure that you still have standing, like, little mini meteors to stand behind so you don't die.
This is the only mechanic that matters on normal difficulty. If you can not drop the meteors inside the boss's circle, and you can hide behind them once the ecliptic comes down, you're golden here. Not so on minimum eye level. That's just the beginning. Oh my god. So let's talk about everything in turn. First off, like Jin previewed at the very beginning of the episode, there are towers. A surprise to most people, I'm sure, is that there are four towers around the outside of the arena. These are big, tall, blue glowing towers.
They do stuff, you guys, and you gotta click on them.
Each tower will sometimes light up with pink bands of energy. When they do so, you gotta click them.
Yeah, shut it off.
If you don't, they will pulse out a raid wide for big damage.
It will kill you. So like, I think maybe like the second pull on this. And at this point you were like, okay, we need to assign a person to a tower because we couldn't just have everybody running around and like maybe grabbing a tower if they were in the vicinity. Like, no. Okay. You are assigned to tower 1, 2, 3, 4. I had tower 3. And so I was like babysitting the shit out of that tower. The pink thing showed up. I'm like, boom, no. But if other towers are allowed to throw this lightning energy across the floor of the entire arena.
The towers do a raid wide. The lightning is persistent.
So how does that affect the lightning debuff that everybody has?
It doesn't. It's a persistent effect.
So if you get got by the lightning effect, that just means you weren't being healed.
Yes.
And me not being healed is because I was babysitting my tower and I was off on the perimeter of the arena and I was not in the vicinity of heals.
Yes.
We were all figuring this out. So anyway, yeah. I'm babysitting my tower. It's going up like every 15 seconds and you have to go there. Shut it off. Shut it off. Shut it off. Shut it off. So you're living on the perimeter of the arena. You're probably missing out on a whole bunch of like AoE heals because everybody else is not where you are. So there's that. Okay. Towers. Turn them off. And then there's also the persistent lightning damage that is going across the entire floor of the arena.
Right. So there is a persistent just floor is lightning type thing going on that does damage over time. Probably never care about it in normal, but in min eye level, you have to be doing group heals constantly to offset the damage from this floor is lightning effect. I pretty much made sure I had Medica 2 up at all times during the fight to offset the tick damage from the lightning.
Yep.
And also that, of course, means that positioning around your party is very important because if party members are too far away from the AoE heals, then they miss out and they will die to the tick damage from the lightning.
And then we have the Iron Giants.
Oh, God. Iron Giants are one of two types of adds that will spawn during the fight. The other one are bombs. Bombs will detonate as they do.
The Iron Giants are the most annoying. The Iron Giants, because they will destroy the towers, won't they?
Yes.
They cleave, everything they will destroy the towers.
So Behemoth has a cleave, destroys a tower. Giants cleave, destroys a tower. Bomb detonation, destroys a tower.
Don't destroy the towers. So off tanks need to pull the Iron Giants when they pop up. You need to focus fire on these guys because they are so annoying. Honestly, like, throw your dots on Behemoth. Have a couple of guys fighting Behemoth. Like, nobody gives a shit. He's a sucker. It's the towers. It's the lightning. It's the Iron Giants. It's the bombs. It's literally everything else besides Behemoth that's actually doing all the fucking work here.
You say that, except that Behemoth has the Realm Reborn. Meteor. The Realm Reborn classic fuck you tank mechanic, which is that it'll do a untelegraphed tank buster followed by an auto attack.
Yeah.
Which can bring a tank down to 10% health.
That shit was all over coils,
in 2
too.
Seconds. Yeah. So you will have less
than the
time.
And you know why this is? This was designed for each alliance to have 2 tanks. There should be 6 tanks in these fights.
Yes. Which doesn't matter at all for normal, but we felt the pain here.
Indeed.
In
Yeah,
because
there's like
level.
6 skeletons.
Yeah.
There's like a billion Iron Giants. There's like, there's something for 6 tanks to do in these fights. They didn't change that. Obviously, you can still do it, but like, good God.
Well, anyway, yeah. So the Behemoth will be nearly one-shotting your tank constantly during the fight. So you've got to baby the health bar. It's really annoying that you cannot take your eyes off them. I cannot do DPS because the GCD cooldown of casting arrow could mean the tank will die.
Jesus.
Because they get auto attack,
tank
bustered, and then they're on death's door.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. I hate the A Realm Reborn hard fight tank busters.
I know. They're trying so hard to kill these tanks.
Like, yep.
Stop. Okay, so there's that.
Beyond that, Behemoth will start casting Charybdis later on in the fight. These are a Behemoth classic maneuver. These are big whirlwinds that appear in the arena. They will sometimes pulse out, doing damage in a radius bigger than the size of the whirlwind. So you got to keep
pile
a bit
on.
Away from them.
Just fucking pile it on.
Yep. Besides killing the towers, both the bombs and the Iron Giants, and if they're not being positioned correctly or if the tank dies, Behemoth, their attacks can destroy the little meteors, meaning that they can be destroyed before the ecliptic comes out, and you will have no choice but to wipe if you're not careful with where the AoEs lie.
Yeah.
So we had a couple wipes just because
we're like, shit, we don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah, the various attacks had cleared the arena full of the mini meteors, and there was nowhere to hide from the ecliptic.
So much going on.
This was the toughest fight in the instance by far.
By far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we did it.
Yeah.
We got that clear. The last pull was actually super clean. No problem. We were stable when we got the clear. And yep. That was a really good pull.
Yep.
Once Behemoth goes down, this is it for this leg of the dungeon for the central branch. This triggers this strange device that is floating over the middle of the labyrinth. It's like a big, it looks like a mace or like a scepter almost, but enormous.
Yeah.
This thing has three stone energy plates that circle around it and beam energy into the central scepter-like structure.
Yeah, so by us doing the three legs of this labyrinth first, it shuts those down.
Yeah.
And it kind of like powers off this big central energy spire, which sinks down and then collects a bunch of platform around it, and we ascend to a totally new arena.
Yeah, so it makes an elevator essentially that takes us up to the final boss arena. And this guy was a nice breath of fresh air after the fuck you Behemoth
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, we were like, hey, we know this guy. Because the way the fight is built, you know, min eye level, max level, it doesn't matter. There are bottlenecks in these mechanics that you can't avoid. So we all knew what we were getting into at this one.
So the final fight is Phlegethon, who is an actual character and not just a random void sent or Algon creation.
Well, he is a hero of Eld, an Algon hero of Eld.
A revolutionary hero, as in he was a leader of the rebellions that plagued the Algon Empire before Aemon revived Emperor Zandi. During this time, when Aemon was trying to find a way to resurrect Zandi, he conducted numerous grisly experiments in pursuit of Zandi's revival. Phlegethon was one of Aemon's many victims. The rebel leader was captured and twisted, both bodily and mentally. The result now is the hulking form that we find at the end of this labyrinth.
Damn. So at least we set him free.
Yes, we did. That will be a theme, too, for this overall run.
Yeah.
So this fight takes place in your standard circular stone platform. Around the perimeter are three smaller raised platforms. Ideally, you mark these A, B, and C to remind people which one is their responsibility. Phlegethon has a variety of AoE attacks. No big deal. Well telegraphed, easy to dodge. There will also be a few adds during the fight. During the flare phase, Iron Giants spawn. These are fine, except they have cleaving attacks. So when you're on the flare platform, you gotta dodge cleaves. It's kind of annoying. And then there are the claws. The claws, we saw these as well in the Praetorium. These will grab a player and keep them immobilized until other players kill them. Not a big deal normally, except for the fact that, again, with the flare mechanic, if the claws are not dead, that player is gonna get clawed.
Oh, yeah, I got by this. If nobody's shooting this thing, it will just hold you in perpetuity. There's nothing you can do if nobody else is...
Full lockdown.
Yeah. So that... I got by that. So when he did Ancient Flare, I was caught in the middle. And then I got rezzed to the platform outside and also was just stuck and died immediately. And it was like this whole spiral. And then somebody else, I think Keelan, they got a couple of times. But the same thing. Like, the claw will grab you, and nobody's paying attention to the claw. And if nobody's, firing at it, it's not like the dirty bubble or whatever in Braeflok's Lawn Stop. You can't shoot it yourself. You're done. Like, you're donezo.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating.
You're finished.
You're done. And of course, this is not something that you experience when you do Alliance Raid Roulette. Because, first of all, one person will be like, boop, and it's dead. Who cares? Or you shoot it once and it's a non-issue. So that was new.
So that's all these surrounding mechanics.
Yeah.
Worst case, a claw kills one player, whatever.
You also see an aggressive escalation in Phlegethon's AoEs that he does. Cleaves and AoEs, they become larger. They reduce the movable area of the arena for you by a lot.
Yeah, I saw one I've never seen before during this fight. It's
like
some sort of crisscross.
Yeah, the green.
The green triangles I've seen in ADR. If that's what you're talking about.
Are these the fire puddles?
No, there's a...
There are a few.
There are a few AoEs here. The one I'm thinking of is there's like a lattice of these red...
Yeah, the lattice.
It looks just like a basket weave almost of markers you've got to slip between. Easy to dodge. It's just more things to not be in, of course. But the pattern, it was new to me. I don't think I've ever seen that on ADR because people DPS him too fast to have that one come out.
The red and black scallop that you see all the time.
Yeah.
And the green Vs, I don't remember, but that's probably because doing ADR, it like, who cares? But when you're doing it on minimum level, obviously the fight goes on a little bit longer than normal. And so that, the green, it's like these cone cleaves, and there's a bunch of them that are they're going out radially. And then the center of these green cleaves, there's going to be like this kind of lightning looking, like electric effect. And then on the outside, there isn't that, but it's, to me, it was really subtle. And because the edge of the cleave is a thick, bright green glowing, like boom. And then it's filled with this like kind of sort of like greenish electric, like, I don't know, is it safe? Is it like not safe? And then on the outside of that cleave, it's just normal ground. But in a split second, you're like, fuck, where do I stand?
I agree. The interior color is very samey to the outside safe space. So yeah. I knew the pattern from before, so I was fine. But I can see how someone who has not seen that would look at the inside of these shapes and think they're safe,
like, because they look...
It was not like almost normal stone color.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there's that.
We dodged the shit. Ancient Flare, this is the linchpin of the fight. Will you pass or will you wipe? So first off, ideally your main tank will bring Phlegethon south of the center of the arena, pointing them away from the groups and fight them a good distance away from the center to give everyone more reaction time. I have seen some people in ADR say, hey, can you bring them away from the middle, please? And the main tank goes, no, fuck you, get good. Which, not productive.
Not productive. Everybody hates you. Way to go, winning.
Yes. And also, if people can't react in time, then you're going to wipe yourself. So I don't know who this benefits.
Winning. Super good.
But anyway, so if you bring him away from the center, you'll have time to react whenever he triggers his Ancient Flare. Ancient Flare is a mechanic where Phlegethon will walk to the dead center of the arena and start his Ancient Flare cast bar. As soon as you see him start walking somewhere, that's your sign to book it for your respective platform. If at least four players are on the platform, on each platform, if one alliance is down, then you're screwed. If you have four per platform, a massive energy barrier appears around the outside of the arena, and when Ancient Flare goes off, it will block the flare. Otherwise, everyone wipes. And you can see this inferno of energy inside the barrier. This thing is not like a one-off pulse. It is like an inferno, like a reactor of fire inside there.
It's backdraft.
During the camp out and stay safe phase, that's when those iron giants spawn. It is pretty dicey having those cleaves come out in that little tiny stone platform. And that's the fight. If you can resolve the flare, you're good to go. You defeat Phlegethon. And you have cleared the Labyrinth of the Ancients. Afterwards, we are joined by the rest of Noa. They marvel at the labyrinth interior, and Graha asks about our experience clearing out the labyrinth. We recount it for him, and he remarks that, indeed, Phlegethon was a former hero of the Revolution. Cid is surprised that he can tell, but Graha assures him that he knows his Allegan history. It's his job, after all. The exchange is cut short, though, by Biggs and Wedge, who have gone on ahead. They call for our attention. And we look over, and we can see from this stone platform where we defeated Phlegethon, there is now an open gateway. We can see the outside world, and we can see the base of the Crystal Tower there. But for now, though, retreat and regroup back at Noa Base Camp, and that's where we'll leave off, too.
I knew the introduction of Graha was going to happen here, and I don't remember quite how it happened. And then when it happened, I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is just like the Summoner Guildmaster stuff where he's like, you know.
That was my exact same thought, too, actually, from the whole mysterious voice bullshit, was that this feels just like the Summoner, like the Arcanist quest line.
Right.
Not Summoner.
Right. It just feels insulting. Like, you're better than, I don't know you, but you're better than this. I'm certainly better than this. This is a waste of everybody's time. This shows like a complete lack of respect for who I am, my skill set, what it is that I'm doing, and also you. Like, you've got nothing fucking better to do. But, you know, stories.
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 The end.
Yeah. It's just, he's like, he's very immature in these moments. That's the impression. He's just very immature. He's excitable. He's a little unprofessional. He's braggadocious.
That's all fine. It's just the childlike mischief, whatever.
Like,
but also that's paired though with the superiority forced upon you by him, and that you're forced to, you don't have a choice unless you want to quit the game. You're forced to go along with his tricks, which is insulting.
It's so insulting.
To your character.
Yes.
But there's no other option, though, but to do so if you want to move this story forward.
Yeah. So, you know, he's lucky we're not the kind to rage quit. Oh, we got some, like, mystery fucking guy stealing our oars? Like, I'm out. Fuck you, Ramrose. Fuck you, Outlandish Man. I'm gonna go work for Buskarone.
Well, I feel more like this is a scenario where, because of obviously it being a linear story, you can't do anything but say yes to the next step.
You don't have any autonomy.
But if this were a more free-form activity, I guarantee most people would be trying to find this asshole or something.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than...
Yeah.
Or like maybe trap him on the way, like, to the...
Okay, all right, bro. I'll play your little game, but I'm going to string you along and I'm going to turn the tables on you.
But there's no... agency, which is fine. It's just that it's insulting to have to play his game to play the game.
I know. Anyway, so there's that.
And I think that his whole intro in Mordona would be kind of like, you know, eye roll, whatever. Yes, you think that you're super cool jumping down from this high scaffolding. Okay, welcome.
Yeah, he's a cat boy, I guess.
Yeah, that would not sting so much if it had not been preceded by all the other bullshit. Ugh. It is the 1-2 punch of the puppet master and then the check me out, I'm so cool. That is what fucking sucks.
And then the weird thing is, though, like, even after all of this, in the game, all of our characters, you know, Biggs and Biggs, Wedge, Sid, us, we're totally just like, oh, how droll. We're just totally bemused and
what I'd say
delighted by this man.
Is that Rambrose is probably used to his shit. Well, he is used to his shit because he calls him out as being up to his normal antics.
I mean, this guy is fresh out of it.
And nobody else, though, is aware of the pain that we suffered just then. I think that our character's reaction is somewhat up to our interpretation as well, because we're the silent protagonist.
You know, depending on the kind of person you are, it's fucking ether sand. I'll get it out of their way. Maybe this is like a fun diversion from, you know, the drudgery of just like picking up, finding some like random ass material. We've been through much worse. And so maybe, like, yeah, after all that we've been through, in with all of that context, we see like a kid like this playing a little game and having fun with it. We're like, yeah, man, you know what? You got me. Good on you. And we give him, we're smiling at him the whole time. We're like, you know, we're just kind of bemused by it, which isn't how I felt as a real person on Earth playing the game. But like, I can see both.
Sure.
And also, this was the first time ever seeing these mechanics in this. Never saw them before.
I think for most of us.
Yeah. It's the only way you can see these mechanics is if you get a big party together and you all agree to do minimum eye level.
Get a 24-person party together, so which is luck. Not a small undertaking.
Correct. Or you're able to do this series when it was first released a million years ago. That's it. It's the only way.
Yeah.
So I think like most people probably haven't seen these mechanics. You should try it though. You know, just once. Just do it once.
Easier said than done, of course. It was posted today. There is a Discord out there that is all about those min eye level runs of old content.
Nice.
So there is a group out there that does this more than once.
Of course there is.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jen. And thank you once again, everyone. Great run. I had a great time.
It was super fun.
Super fun. Super great.
Yeah.
Next time, we are climbing that tower. We are on to Circus Tower. Don't put me in a box, Jen. I'm not going to dance to your tune, Jen.
Come on. I'll give you some ether sand.
Hard pass.
And that will do it for today's episode. Thanks so much, as always, for listening and being you and being super sweet. If you want to get in touch with us, you can at podreturnffxiv@gmail.com. You can check the show notes for our Discord, join up, share your glams, talk about the game, talk about your life, and join us on these group runs that we do every so often. And then also check out, if you want, our Patreon, patreon.com/podreturnffxiv. For $1 a month, you get access to some other bonus content that we release, like monthly-ish. So give that a listen if you want. We did just release a free episode about our Cafe Eorzea experience in Tokyo and Osaka, if you want to give that a listen. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night, and we will see you next time.